So welcome to the fifth of our bite-sized regulation podcasts. And today we're going to try and pick crypto CBDCs. And we'll be looking at them from a payments point of view, which I think is a really important piece to mention. We're not going to go into hashing and all the technology that goes behind that, but we are looking at it from a payments point of view. So I am super pleased to be joined by my good friend, Eric. Eric is the principal at Intrepid Ventures. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks, Paul. I'm looking forward to this.
You say that now. Let's get going then. So before we jump in, again, I just want to say we're not going to get into the deep tech because there is so much of the deep tech, especially around the crypto stuff, that actually deflects from what it's for and what it's actually trying to do. You know, we need to start to unbundle a few things, because now that we have crypto and CBDCs, some of the things that we take for granted are new, right? So we talk about money and we talk about currency as if they're the same thing, and they're subtly different things. So most countries do have their own currencies. Some in the EU, for instance, have decided to use the same, but typically the 195 countries of the world use their own, and they are there basically to control and manage their own country's fiscal policy. Currencies, USD, euros, etc., are issued by their central bank, and they're also known as fiat money, and that's a term that not many people used that long ago. Fiat comes from the Latin, means let it be done, and these are typically coins and paper money. But they no longer have any intrinsic value. They're not made of precious metals or gold. And frankly, they're not backed by gold anymore. And they are, you know, their actual value is whatever the government says it is. And that's an issue I'm sure we'll unpick in a minute. But today, you know, day to day, we don't normally just use those types of money. We use, you know, different types of money, commercial bank money, cards, checks, but none of them are actually digital. And frankly, the truth of the matter is people just don't care.
I would jump in and just make one qualifier or observation. It is certainly true that we now live in a world of fiat money, with governments, typically central banks, controlling our fiat money. However, governments don't set the value. If they did, the Zimbabwe experience and the Venezuela experience would have been rather different. In fact, I would observe that there's a strong tendency of most governments to debase their currencies. And this is something that has happened throughout history. There are pluses for governments in having control of the currency. But there are some negatives for consumers and businesses because governments inevitably debase their currencies.
And I think that's one of the key things that you hear when you start to listen to the crypto world. They actually talk about macroeconomic policy at the fore, and effectively that's what you're getting at. But now we have two major digital types of currency, or is that three?
Yeah, I think it's three. So I guess I would frame it that with three buckets. So we have cryptocurrencies. So these thousands and thousands of cryptocurrencies. So Bitcoin being the first, launched in 2009, still far and away the largest cryptocurrency by market capitalization, and kind of the dream, the standard, not controlled by anybody. Immutable value on this distributed digital ledger, appealed to libertarians. The early evangelists for Bitcoin held out that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies would upend fiat currency, the dollar, the euro, the pound, would upend traditional digital payment systems, so Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, Western Union, MoneyGram. I would argue that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies writ large have never been fit for purpose as payment systems. Bitcoin has been an interesting speculative investment. mean, there's no intrinsic value. There have been some individual use cases. It had some heavy use to get capital out of China. But today, there's nothing behind it. The value is what someone is willing, the greater fool theory, I think, obtains. So crypto has the value of what somebody next month is willing to pay for it. I buy it based on the hope, the expectation that there will be the proverbial greater fool next month who will pay more for it. But this notion that cryptocurrencies are going to transform the payments universe, I think that hasn't panned out. It's not going to pan out. The existing payments universe, existing payment systems work reasonably well. They are widely established. Mm-hmm. They are habit. And to build a new payment system, the challenger has to be in some respect compellingly better than the incumbent systems. On top of which, crypto is subject to significant regulatory and political hostility in many jurisdictions. There are a few jurisdictions that have been crypto friendly. El Salvador notably has made crypto the currency along with the dollar. But that experiment has not been terribly successful. So crypto isn't going away, but the valuation in the crypto markets has plummeted. We've had some very high profile failures, most recently FTX, the Alameda Research, the Companion Trading Organization, BlockFi, which was a crypto lender. Previously, we had Terra Dollar, the algorithmic stablecoin, and the companion cryptocurrency Luna, both of which crashed and burned. And I think that sobered up the market. It's with some of these, with FTX and Alameda, there are some marquee investors that put a lot of money into these the platforms. Apparently, without a lot of heavy due diligence, without normal controls that you'd expect, board seats, oversight, on a hope, on the hype, on and I think that period has come to an end, I think.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, but at least we forget there's some 9,000 cryptocurrencies.
Yeah,
I mean, it's almost incredible to think just the sheer volume of people doing that work and creating that number of cryptocurrencies. When you Google how many countries there are in the world, there's 195. So how many currencies do you need is kind of partially on my mind. But then if you look at the CBDCs, it's almost, CBDCs are essentially the governments of the world's comeback story. So what they're saying is central bank digital currency is a digital variant of what they already have. What they already exist, what already is there, is regulated, and eventually is a fiat currency backed. So being inherently digital, they can easily integrate into applications in the same way as crypto can. And effectively, that's their real strength. Outside of that, it's a little bit mute, if we're honest. And as you say, Eric, the current systems work pretty well. I mean, the day-to-day, they work. Yep. Now, of course, they could be an FX process, and SWIFT and others are looking at FX of CBDCs between each other. So in theory, they could go cross-border. But effectively, it feels a little bit like the governments of the world are saying, yeah, I've got it. I've got a digital story now.
Yeah, I think at one level, we have every central bank has a digital currency, a digital central bank money that banks are already using. So all the banks in the UK, the banks in the US have accounts at the central bank. So effectively, that is digital currency. But the central bank money is not available today in most jurisdictions around the world in a digital basis for retail use or for wholesale use between businesses. Cash, physical cash, which is a central bank liability, is central bank money. We don't think about it that way. But in virtually every country on the planet, the central bank is the issuer of physical cash. That's a central bank liability. A central bank digital currency would, in the same vein, be a digital bank central bank liability. Most of the pilots, most of the discussion has been around retail. So a digital central bank currency that you and I, Joe and Sally Sixpack, can use, we could hold it in our digital wallet and use that to pay, make P2P payments, make retail payments, make bill payments. There are also the possibility, and I think we will see some wholesale central bank digital currencies for transfer between central banks, for transfers between banks. Now, the use case there, if you think about real-time payment systems increasingly being the norm in almost all major countries, one has to ask, what will be the benefit of a central bank digital currency if we already have real-time payment systems? I mean, it may be some benefit. We transfer the token, and it's a one transaction. The token is the value. But effectively, there's not a big change there. I do think that it will be hard for central bank digital currencies in mature payments markets to displace established systems. And if we think about digital currencies, digital cash as a network. So I mean, money is a store of value. It's a unit of account or measurement. It's a means of exchange, but it's also a network, and dependent upon how many people will accept it, how many people want to spend with it. I mean, if I'm parachuted into the Hindu Kush or the Amazon jungle and I give somebody a $100 cash bill, I'm pretty confident they're going to take it. However, if I'm in the Hindu Kush and I'm in the Amazon and I hand someone a 100 lira a Lebanese note, they're probably not going to take it. So, I mean, the dollar has maybe a unique status, world reserve currency, the biggest network, if you will. And I think the same thing, to the extent we have multiple, and we will have multiple central bank digital currencies, that will obtain as well. And while many central bank digital currencies will be designed to be domestic only, some will not. And if you have some major digital currencies designed to support use worldwide, those digital tokens representing dollars, euros, pounds, whatever, will find use cases outside the home jurisdiction. I mean, there are most of the physical cash, a huge amount of physical dollars is circulating outside the United States. And dollars, the king dollar is the principal currency used in Zimbabwe, El Salvador, Ecuador, Hong Kong has a dollar currency board. I would submit, we don't know yet whether the Fed will be authorized to and will issue a digital dollar. But if it were to issue a digital dollar, and assuming that that digital dollar was enabled to be used outside the United States, and I think if you listen to advocates of the digital dollar, both on the left and the right, this notion of protecting king dollar, whatever that means, is something that they all sing that as one of the reasons that one should issue, have a digital dollar. Well, if I'm a Venezuelan or a Zimbabwean and I can have digital dollars in my PayPal wallet, my Apple Pay wallet, my Google Pay wallet, and transact in dollars instead of in bolivars or Zimbabwean dollars, I think many will. Would a digital euro make a compelling big impact in Europe or North America? I'm somewhat skeptical, and I'm somewhat skeptical. I mean, not to say that it won't get it be in the mix, but consumers and businesses today don't have a big issue spending online, electronically. Now, we can say behind the scenes that it's messy. It's not, we might not design our payment systems from scratch the way they exist today, but they do exist, and they work quite well. Cross-border, many people will say, well, the cross-border payment systems are less competitive, they're less effective, the pricing is richer for the same transaction cross-border versus domestic. And that's all well true. And maybe CBDCs or maybe private digital money can play a role to enhance cross-border payments. But again, cross-border payments, the system, it works. We look at SWIFT with correspondent banking. The network is pretty global. It's baked in. We look at some of the instant credit systems. So MasterCard Send, Visa Direct, they're global. They're instant. They reach billions of accounts, endpoints. There were some hope that cryptocurrencies were going to be transform cross-border payments, and that didn't really pan out.
But there's a couple of things in there, aren't there? I mean, you know, so these things aren't new. So, if you go back to the 12th century, you know, the Knights Templar created their own tokenization of money for people traveling to the Holy Lands. Yeah. And they gave them tokens because these people that were actually traveling were being robbed of their gold and their silver and their jewels and what have you. So they gave them tokens. It's the same thing. It's also true to say not that long ago, we had Linden dollars in Second Life, in the metaverse of Second Life, where you could spend real money once it's been transferred to Linden dollars in doing something in that metaverse, whatever that was. But frankly, neither of those two things did particularly well. So while these things aren't new, it is also true to say, I read an EU report that said there was 150 methods of payment just in the EU.
Sure.
Now, do we need another 9,000? I suspect we don't. I suspect strongly at the edge of this is about digitalization rather than having a new currency methodology, whether it's crypto or CBDCs. That's kind of the way I see it. It's probably moving from the analog world to the digital world again. It's the same story in many ways.
Yeah, Paul, I like the way you frame it because I do think, the big benefit in terms of payments is digital. And again, that's already happening. And I don't know that there's a magic number of the optimal number of payment systems. Competition in payments is good. And I would argue the competition, even in payment systems that are perceived as core infrastructure, is very healthy because it's dynamic. Competition spurs innovation. It's self-correcting. Whereas, almost kind of a seductive appeal that particularly for core infrastructure, that if we could simply engineer the perfect right central system, that would be more efficient because there'd only be one system. We wouldn't have redundant expense. But that's, and maybe run by the central bank or run by a consortium of banks. But that would be not particularly innovative. It would not be self-correcting. It wouldn't be responsive. Systems where there are dozens, scores, hundreds of payment systems out in the market, vying for favor, looking to enhance, the market will consolidate if there are too many. Systems that are not delighting or satisfying consumers, banks, businesses will go away. Capital will be reallocated. I very much am a fan of more payments, of competition in payment systems for retail payments, for bill payment, for P2P payments, for cross-border, for the core interbank payment systems, which people talk about as infrastructure. And I would go one step further. The great economist and philosopher Friedrich Hayek used to evangelize the benefits of competition between currencies. And the idea, so imagine a world in which there was only one currency. Let's hypothetically, the dollar. Well, I guarantee you, a world with one currency, the dollar, would be abused. The dollar would be abused. The value would be debased. Having, at least a handful of viable competing currencies. So the currency being the store of value, either an account, the means of exchange, a payment system, in effect, is healthy. And folks who want to defend King Dollar, having threats to King Dollar, I would argue, is not a bad thing.
Well, isn't that, you know, that's, so I agree with that point, by the way, I really do. I think the interesting thing that strikes me is we were at the Fed conference and we heard the Fed quite openly say, yeah, these things are interesting, but we'll kind of watch the digital euro go and see how that goes. We'll hold off. And I, if I was them, I would do exactly the same because they're in a very strong point. You know, the dollar is the king of currencies around the world. But on the other hand, other regions and countries have to make their statement. They still want to be relevant at that central stage. So the euro, the sterling, what have you, they all want to be politically relevant. And I think the fact that we've got 100 of the 195 countries all saying they're going to do something is around not wishing to be seen not to be part of the story. And therefore, I think, you know, the EU wants to do it quickly so it can be part of the first tranche. So yeah, it's probably politics with a big P rather than payments with a little P.
Huge. I wholeheartedly agree. And I think we a little bit of public choice theory obtains here. If you think about if you're a central banker, this is kind of neat stuff. This is leading edge stuff. And so, you know, launching your own CBDC, your peers are doing launching CBDCs. It's being socialized around the world. And I think that you know, will drive many to push to accelerate the development of CBDC. There's a competitive element. So remember when Facebook announced Libra back in 2019, and that spurred a lot, that accelerated interest by central banks.
Yeah,
along absolutely. With stirring up a firestorm of regulatory and political hostility. But it definitely spurred greater interest by central banks. And I think there's an interesting, if you think about, we take for granted that there will be, we're going to be in a world with a lot of CBDCs. Maybe not every central bank will have one, but many, if not most, will. And it'll be a mixture of retail, wholesale. We have private digital currencies. So, you know, most of the money that people use, businesses use, isn't central bank money, it's commercial bank money. We don't really think other than physical cash. We don't think about that, but the money that we're relying upon, you know, is commercial bank liabilities. There are, you know, a handful, mostly in dollars, of digital stable coins backed in principle one by one by dollars. To date, these stable coins are being used almost exclusively to trade in and out of crypto. So they haven't been able to find broader use cases. And I think part of that is because, you know, there aren't necessarily big compelling problems out there in the broader payment system. But having a world in which regulated banks, regulated fintechs are experimenting and issuing private digital currencies, competing digital currencies, I think would be very healthy. You know, we don't know what use cases would be developed, but I think it makes it more likely that we would see some interesting, unexpected use cases develop, both domestically for cross-border. And I do worry that if a central bank issues a digital currency, say the Fed issues a digital dollar, that will deter private actors from issuing private digital dollars, digital currencies, stable coins, because nobody wants to compete with a central bank, which has effectively unlimited resources. Exactly. And in many markets is the primary regulator of the banks.
Exactly.
And there are some markets. So in the China market, I think it's almost inconceivable, although there was an early Tencent had an early digital currency called Q, the Q coin, which is still out there. And it was intended for use on the Tencent platform. And then it launched back in 2005. Use spilled out into lots of, as you'd expect, into lots of illicit activity, pornography, a variety of illegal activities. But the PBOC, you know, has a digital yuan, a large scale pilot, and has a variety of agendas there, but they're not going to permit range of Chinese banks and fintechs to have competing currencies.
I think that's absolutely right. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, I think there's 200 million dollars equivalent, and there's been 200 actual transactions. So, it's a pilot, but it's not a big pilot, although the money always sounds amazing when you talk about China. But I think if you and I have, listened to the Fed, I've spoken to the Bank of England and the ECB, and they're all saying the same things, right? And you would expect them to be saying the same things, which is effectively, crypto is an asset, we'll regulate it as an asset.
Yeah.
It's not a payment, and it won't be regulated as a payment, full stop. However, they need to react. And so they've come out with CBDCs to be, digital, and they will be regulated. Now, the question is, and you mentioned this before, do you want to be regulated? And certainly there's, a large portion of people out there. You just, search crypto on YouTube and you'll get almost cult-like people telling you that the man is going to get you. It really comes down to both digital. One is regulated. You either like that or you want to be outside of that. But the truth of the matter is most of the money that you and I will deal with will be fiat-based, whether that's CBDC sometime in the future, and they'll be in the regulated world. Is that about it? I mean,
I understand the sentiment to want to get outside the regulated world. However, I think the harsh reality is that, genuinely unregulated payment systems are only going to exist at the margin. And if I want to build a relevant, large-scale new payment system, so let's say I have a better trap stablecoin model.
Yep. Yep.
I want a clear legal and regulatory regime, ideally relatively light, but clear and certain, as opposed to uncertain. So, and we're in certainly in the United States at this point, we're in an environment where the regulatory environment around private digital currencies is evolving. I think the Sam Bankman-Fried scandal, the crash of FTX and Alameda, is likely to accelerate Congress providing at the federal level legal and regulatory clarity. It's likely more severe, or will be more severe, than many in the industry would have hoped for. But nevertheless, having clarity will be good. And having space for the private sector to innovate while the Fed isn't doing nothing, I think that would be positive. If 5 years down the road the Fed launches a Fed dollar, and we have a handful of private digital currencies, I think there's a risk that that people withdraw capital, interest in those private currencies goes away. I don't see anything particularly wrong with a Citi dollar, a Chase dollar, a Bank of America dollar, Circle, Tether. If we think back more than a century ago, banks in the United States, banks in England, banks in Canada, banks in Scotland issued banknotes. So commercial banks issued physical pieces of paper. That was cash. And that system worked reasonably well. And if we think about digital or dollar or pound or euro stable coins, that might be the 21st century version of banknotes. If I'm a Venezuelan, I think I'd be reasonably happy to be accepting a digital Citi dollar instead of a Bolivar.
I think that's right. I think that, I think sooner or later you come back into the regulated world. So all the other pieces are on the outside and you need a methodology to get it in. You need a methodology to get it out. And therein lies the most of the trouble, to be honest with you. But, you see a lot of the cap markets people saying, I need to have smart contracts and therefore I need to have wholesale CBDCs. Well, you need smart contracts, whether they need to be CBDC backed is a separate question. Thing,
yes. Yeah.
And then you see this conversation around, well, I need to have digital light cash. And it's like, and that kind of strikes me that that's a place where there is so little competition that nobody else is going to shout at you. So the truth of the matter is you can get on and do that yourself, because the only person you're arguing with is yourself, because you issue the cash. So I think the use cases are, you know, they are there, but they're really based upon the digital transformation that they bring rather than something truly unique at this stage in time. Oh, it's kind of like my two penny worth of CBDCs. Is that a...
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think you know, well, certainly if when CBDCs are in the market at some scale, which is going to take time, you know, maybe the market, we will discover new use cases. You know, there are people, you know, the issue, we changed the cost equation of, if I can hold central bank money in my digital wallet, the cost of doing that is a lot easier than, say, withdrawing $100,000 in cash and putting it under my mattress, right? That, so there's a,
yeah, yeah.
And people, I think, you know, one can legitimately worry that we might, in a scare, that assets could be drained out of the banking system. So, you know, banks are lending off of an asset base. Well, if consumers are pulling out digital or the CBDCs and holding those in their digital wallet, that's not good for commercial banks. Is that likely in a stable environment? I don't think so, but certainly something people worry about. There are some competing, this discussion about competing models of CBDCs. There's some advocates of the central bank banking consumers and businesses directly, which I think is very, very worrisome. I think the more likely model in most jurisdictions will be that the central bank liability, the CBDC, is distributed through the commercial banking system, much like physical cash is today. And that's much less, it's not disruptive. It's simply one more instrument. And I think the impact would likely be kind of mild, at least initially.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, if I was to summarize it all up, I would say this is a digitalization story. There are proofs of concepts of what it actually means, what it could actually do. And, you know, we'll see the, you know, digital euro come out next year and we'll see its real use cases. But in fact, it's really at the POC level, it's really having a look to see what else it spawns rather than it being truly a revolutionary thing. So, you know, people like us, will we support them? Of course we will, because, yep, you know, if that's what banks want to do, of course we'll support them and, you know, we'll disperse funds. But, you know, it's a ways off being the new most important thing in payments. So I think payments works pretty well right now.
Absolutely. It is, you know, the conceptually, digital currency, whether it's central bank digital currency or private digital currency, if you think about the framework of physical cash in my wallet, and I have a variety of other payment instruments in my wallets or keys to payment instruments, and I think in the online world, the same will obtain with digital currencies. I have my stable coins or some stable coins, I have perhaps some central bank digital currency, and there may be some circumstances where some people use those to make payments, P2P payments or retail payments online, in lieu of paying with a credit card, a debit card, some existing alternative payment systems. Some consumers, some businesses may choose never to use them. Some businesses may push them because they're less expensive. But they also have to build network critical mass. And the places where it will be easy for them to build network critical mass are places that for some reason the existing system doesn't serve so well. So, you know, if I have a digital dollar, private digital dollar, or a central bank digital dollar, and I can send it to somebody in my home country, maybe, let's say it's in South America, it's in Africa, and I can send it to my mom and she has a digital wallet and I just transmit it. Well, maybe that's a better use case. That's compelling. Now, there's some interesting regulatory issues there.
Indeed.
Yeah. So there will be regulatory, understandable regulatory hesitancy. I think there's a balance as these systems evolve, having a reasonably light initially regulatory approach to see how they develop, and when they're not at scale, will be healthy. And there's always, and then tightening up as the systems develop and one can see where the issues are. But if at the regulatory regime is tight at the outset, that will tend to prevent, to suppress, to stifle innovation, in these systems. And they're new. And, the smartest people who are, working with these systems, they can't expect, anticipate, actually how they're going to be used, and they don't know how they're going to need to be enhanced. Some of that will be discovery in the market.
And I think that's exactly right. I think, I think that just kind of sums it up, to be honest with you. And I think we're in that place right now where it's effectively, let's have a good look. Let's not make it too hard. I say POC, other people will say slightly different things, but eventually it's having a look and we'll see what happens. I don't think it's going to be mass around the corner, but I don't know. I think it's probably, if I was a betting man over 10, 15 years, I would say yes, it's got to be digital. But near term, as you say, there's not enough mass, not enough distribution, and the use cases aren't so clear.
And back, if we go back 30 years ago, computer scientist David Chaum launched arguably the first digital currency, DigiCash, back, I think it was 1989. And the early evangelists, and there were some of the same Bitcoin enthusiasm. It was anonymous, it was encrypted. And there were a variety of reasons it failed, but one was it was simply way too early. There wasn't, e-commerce was de minimis. There wasn't really a compelling use case. During the dot-com era, there were some alternative digital currencies, venture capital-backed digital currencies, flus, beans, and there was maybe a period of brief period, a year or two, where people said, well, these are going to be transformative. They went belly up. It is a, the Qcoin I mentioned, the innovation, the time has to be appropriate. The time may come. And now, of course, there's a lot more capital. There are a lot more models being iterated. There are a lot more players, both public and private, which I think is healthy. But the likelihood that this is going to be transformative to the existing financial system, the existing payment systems, in the near term, I think is pretty remote.
Yeah, I think that's true. So let's put a pin in that and say, our next conversation, we're gonna have a conversation about the US and why it's regulatory different to most countries around the world. So I look forward to that. I know you have very strong opinions on regulation as well as the US. Eric, thank you so much indeed for your insight and your time. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
I enjoyed it, Paul. Thanks.